Good morning. Welcome to Mondays with Ryan. That's Ryan G. Hensley. I'm Grant L. Cohn. We're in the off season. Rookie mini camp's coming up. So like the news that comes out is little things, but this one is interesting. It's a grievance from former 49ers. Kyle Shanahan's been the coach here for a while. There's some people that really like him, and there's some people who maybe don't. And we heard it from Willie Snead and Ray Ray McLeod, who are gone and are happy to be gone, which I think, I don't know, maybe Niner fans are like, well, who cares? These are players who didn't do much for the team, but it might be, I'm not taking their side here. I think this is interesting. It might be an interesting peek behind the curtain of their locker room. They always talk about how tight-knit this team is. Well, there might be some resentments and grievances after coming close but not winning the Super Bowl. What do you think of Ray Ray and Willie Snead's comments on Twitter?
Yeah, so Willie Snead said, all I want to do is go back to a team that isn't afraid to let guys compete for a roster spot. These last 3 years have been nothing short of entitlement. Competition breeds champions. And then Ray Ray McLeod QT'd it, added his own little commentary, basically co-signed what Willie Snead was saying. So they're basically saying they really didn't have a fair chance to compete. Originally, when I heard this, I was like wondering, what are they talking about? Like, did they really think they were going to outcompete B.A. or Debo or Juwan Jennings? And that's probably not what they were talking about. I think they're more talking about having an opportunity to compete to make be the fifth guy, the sixth guy on this roster, Willie Snead in particular. I don't know what Ray was talking about because he was the fourth guy. So what is he talking about? He wanted to jump Juwan Jennings. I don't know. I don't really think those guys are better than the guys that were in front of him. But in Willie Snead's case, you can make an argument for him that maybe if he had a better chance to compete, he could have taken Ronnie Bell's spot or Danny Gray's spot, or he would have came in with Chris Conley, although I think Chris Conley did good. Willie Snead, when he played, he was a good player. But I just don't know what they meant necessarily as far as like, whose spot were they actually going to take? Now, that doesn't mean they're incorrect about what they're saying. Like, the Niners probably already predetermined who plays where and what the pecking order was, and they probably didn't really have a chance to compete against those guys. Whether or not they would have beat them, I don't think so. But, you know, the 49ers have shown from time to time, and it's probably not just the Niners, but roster politics plays a part, draft stock plays a part, contract stuff plays a part, and the 49ers probably wanted to see what they could get from their draft picks over veterans like Willie Snead and Ray Ray. So I'm not sure, but I have seen other instances beyond this that do make you feel like the Niners are more political in their decision-making, but that may be all teams.
Yeah, maybe Willie Snead, I think this are different. Maybe Willie Snead feels that he should have had a roster because he was never really on the roster. They'd call him up from the practice squad every once in a while. But he was here for 2 years and he was on the practice squad mostly. So maybe he feels that he was denied opportunities to get more money because he was behind players who were inferior to him, such as Danny Gray or Ronnie Bell or whomever. But I don't really, I mean, Chris Conley was on the team and he's a vet. So maybe it's just that I don't really have that much of sympathy for Willie Snead. I'm sorry. The other one, Ray Ray McLeod, seems like he wanted more opportunities probably on offense. And that one's more interesting because he was on the roster. And so what is he talking about? Does he feel that he should have been getting targets over
Debo
or Juwan? I wonder.
Yeah. And if that's what he thinks, I would disagree. I apologize if my internet's shaky right now. Let me know in the chat if it is. That's the thing is Ray Ray. He did have opportunities and he was okay, but nothing that he did ever made me think he deserves to take Juwan Jennings snaps or definitely not Debo snaps. So I don't know. It kind of sounds like people that are a little bit in their feelings that they never accomplished what they were meant to accomplish. And to be honest, Ray Ray had a tough showing in the Super Bowl and he made a critical mistake in that game that contributed to the loss. So I don't know. They seem a little bitter right now, to be honest.
Okay. So these two guys seem bitter. It's possible you can just write this off as two former players who are bitter at their ex-employees and there's nothing to see here. That's certainly possible. We got to preserve that possibility. It's also possible that this is sort of like maybe a microcosm of some of the things that are going on in the in the locker room right now, because it doesn't seem like Ray Ray and Willie Snead are the only players with grievances. Like Ayuk has a grievance. Ayuk Ballmore in the playoffs, not just the Super Bowl. Ayuk feels like he didn't get enough opportunities, kind of like these two guys. So what are they saying? The opportunities are divvied up politically. So if you've gotten paid, if you're making a lot of money, you're guaranteed your opportunities, sort of like Debo. And maybe that's a big thing they talk about with the wide receivers. These are two wide receivers in the same room. And Kyle always talks about, well, we got so, you know, people say about Kyle's got high standards. You got to block. You got to run those clear out routes 100% effort. Yeah, unless you're Debo. Everyone else, but Debo doesn't. And why? Because he's Kyle's friend. He got paid. Roster politics. So maybe some of these people, some of these veterans kind of roll their eyes when they see some of these double standards in this locker room, in this culture.
The more I think about it, and the more I think about the word that was used by Snead, which was entitlement. Which 49ers wide receiver shows us entitlement based on their play? What would you say?
Debo.
That's what I would say, because he is the guy
I'm friends with the coach. Well. I make a lot of money. They got to give me the ball.
All right. He's the guy that shows up a little out of shape. He's the guy that takes plays off. Maybe these comments were directed towards them favoring Debo Samuel. Maybe that's what this was. And maybe there's some truth to it. I mean, guys like Jimmy Ward spoke about similar things on this team. Guys like, I mean, there's a guy that probably could say this and be 100% accurate, but hasn't said a word because he's, you know, a good businessman. And that guy is Trey Lance. Like, Trey Lance really never had a competition against Sam Darnold. That was Fugazi, right? That wasn't a real competition. They already had to determine what they were going to do. So, but I also think it's probably all teams or most teams. Maybe there's a couple coaches out there that are really just like best player plays. But like another perfect example is where this applied to in the wrong direction, right? They said that Brock Purdy was the best quarterback on the team. Kyle Shanahan supposedly said this in the preseason when they first got him, but they didn't give him an opportunity to play, right? They still went with Jimmy Garoppolo and then Trey Lance and then Brock Purdy. If it was really best players play, then Brock would have had that opportunity from the beginning. So I think there is a lot of roster politics involved with this. It's about draft capital, who you invest with, contract status, draft status, all that comes into play. And I think it's probably true for most teams, maybe not all of them, but I think it's definitely true for this team.
Yeah, it almost feels like, you know, all these wide receivers are held to such a high standard and they're scrutinized in practice and their effort and their blocking and what they do away from when they don't have the ball. And then they get to the biggest game of the season and Debo, who doesn't live up to any of those standards, is the one that you give 11 targets to, and he's the reason you're going to win or lose the game. Like, that would be, and I think like that's why maybe some players on this team are looking at Kyle a little different. He's been here a long time, and the core group of players on this team have always had his back. They vacation together until this year. Maybe they're finally looking, it's like, look, man, we supported you forever. We just lost another Super Bowl, and you gave 11 targets to Debo. Like, we should have won that game. And there's like three or four or five different decisions you made that really affected the outcome. How do you not look at him a little sideways and say, man, well, your decisions are going to be the reason we don't win the Super Bowl if we don't win the Super Bowl?
Well, what did Brandon Ayuk say immediately following the Super Bowl? He said, don't forget what got you here.
Yeah.
Right? Which was Brandon Ayuk getting those kind of targets that Debo got in the Super Bowl. And all of a sudden in the Super Bowl, Debo got them all. It was a weird move that I didn't really understand. Maybe he thought that it was a better mismatch for this game. He was wrong, but maybe that's what he thought going into it. But it did rub Brandon Ayuk the wrong way, and he expressed it, obviously. So, you know, he didn't write that for nothing. There's a reason Brandon Ayuk said those words after the Super Bowl. He was in his feelings, emotional after the Super Bowl loss, and he went to social media and expressed it. Hey, don't forget what got you here. So there is a lot of,
you know,
of
who else would say that? And this is ancient history, but you know who else would say that? Raheem Mostert. He put the Niners in the Super Bowl. Then they got to the Super Bowl, and he continued to come off the bench, and they pretty much phased him out down the stretch of the game when they had a lead. When he was playing well, So they could throw a lot with Jimmy Garoppolo, who they'd given a huge contract to.
Yeah.
Because what, they wanted him to be the Super Bowl MVP or something like that? I mean, there is a little, I mean, there's a lot of roster politics that go on in the Niners, and people don't talk about it because they're so successful. But successful is a tricky word, because in sports, successful means champions. And this team is not. So I don't even think successful is the right word to use with them. They win a lot of games, but they haven't won the big one. That's who they are. So you can't say that their culture is necessarily a championship culture, or that it's, you know, you can't uncriticizable.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely criticizable. And I'm going to continue to criticize until they win a Super Bowl. And I probably in the offseason, I'll still, that's just the way I approach the Niners, man. Even if they win a Super Bowl, I'll probably still have things to say afterwards about how they can improve, et cetera. But yeah, I think it's something within the 49ers culture that you see. There is some entitlement there. There is definitely roster politics. Again, I don't cover a lot of teams or follow a lot of teams as closely as I cover the Niners. So maybe this is true throughout the NFL. I would imagine it's not true for every single team. I would imagine guys like D'Amico Ryans pay less attention to that type of stuff than Kyle does. It seems like Kyle wants to be the cool guy with the, you know, he wants to be one of these players. And so he probably goes in that direction, trying to be friends with these guys, certain guys, more than others. So I think it's probably more prevalent with the 49ers than it is other teams. And you have seen examples of it. Whether or not that's going to end up costing them, maybe it has. Maybe that mentality is what cost them in the Super Bowl, going to Debo 11 times. But sometimes I think it's just Kyle Shanahan outthinking himself. Like, this is what we do, so let's switch it up for the Super Bowl. They won't expect this. Like, sometimes I think it's that too. You know,
I just think it's also this, like, the natural progression of a coach who's been somewhere a long time. They kind of get exposed, not in a bad way, but just in all the ways. Like, everyone knows who you are. You come in, you're in your 30s, you go to the Super Bowl in your 3, you are the man. Everyone loves you. But year 8 and you haven't won the Super Bowl yet, everyone knows exactly who you are, and there's a growing list of people who have issues with you. These two guys, Jimmy Ward, Jimmy Garoppolo, Steve Wilkes. I mean, I bet you there's a list of dozens of people who feel they've gotten the shaft from Kyle Shanahan, right or wrong. And until you win the Super Bowl, these grievances get louder and louder and louder. And it seems to indicate, well, it comes from a section of people that think that you can't get it done. There's something wrong with you. Anyway, maybe it's nothing. Maybe I'm overreacting to Willie Snead and Ray McLeod, but
yeah,
I just see all we heard this offseason is grievance, resentment, as opposed to last year when they really rallied. They were galvanized by the way they lost that NFC Championship game. Like, no, we were the best team. We got screwed. Brock Purdy's the truth. We're going to come back and prove it this year. Like, this year it's just like, oh, yeah, that one hurt. Really hurt. Trying to walk it off.
For me as a coach, and again, I just coached high school basketball. I'm not talking about NFL football here, but whenever I lost a close game, it's very simple. Whenever I lost a close game, I always blame myself, because I feel like if it's a close game, that means my players were doing enough to get me there, and there's something I could have done differently to put them over the edge. And I wonder, you know, if the players look at Kyle like that at this point. It's weird. You said year 8. I didn't even that really hasn't hit me yet that we're going into year 8 of Kyle Shanahan. But a lot of these guys have been there a long time, and they've lost a couple Super Bowls that were very close. And so there might be some questioning going on with some of these players as to why they are getting there, but ultimately not winning the thing.
And with one more thing before we move on, just occurred to me, Ray Ray in particular, Willie Snead, dude, you're a practice squad player. If you get a spot on a 53-man roster anywhere else ever again, I tip my cap to you. I don't really know where this is coming from. Ray Ray's interesting. He never really got an opportunity to do much on offense. Understandably, they have a lot of players to feed. But he was pretty much scapegoated for that Super Bowl loss. It was his fault. They got rid of him. They brought in Trent Taylor. They brought in Ricky Pearsall. They brought in Jacob Cowing. It's like all kind of punt returners. And that's not, I mean, he certainly was at fault for sure in the Super Bowl.
He's like one of 10 reasons.
Yeah. Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I can see why he had his grievance. My ball, Zach Ertz says, with all this new running backs, I hate to say we will never see Mason. I'm sure we will never see Bell either. Both kids got talent. It's sickening. I also like Ronnie Bell. It seemed like when he would catch the ball, when he would get an opportunity to get a target, he'd like catch a touchdown.
This name right here distracted me. I can't.
Did you catch it? Sorry, my ball, Zach Ertz. Dave Barclay says, everyone on this team has a grievance with Kyle because he's the problem. What up, Ryan Grant? How are we this morning? Debo is the entitled guy. That's got to go.
Yeah, I think when they're talking about entitlement, that's what they mean. But it is weird coming from Willie Snead. Like, bro, you weren't going to take Debo's spot. Like, even as Debo is the weaknesses that Debo has, even with those, he's a better wide receiver than Willie Snead.
I hate to get snarky, but I have to. It's like you want an opportunity to compete for a roster spot? Go to the Canadian Football League. Like, I don't know what to tell you. If you were good enough, you'd be on a team.
He's been in this league for a long time. If he, you know, if he hasn't earned that one wide receiver one or two spot by now, there's probably a reason, man.
He makes it seem like a bunch of teams wanted him, and he was doing the Niners a favor because they're going to win a Super Bowl, and he was counting on them to, return the favor. If you could get a spot, you'd have a spot. So I don't see why this is the Niners' fault. You're just getting older. You're 30-something. Package deal, trade Kyle and Debo together. It's not going to happen. No. Al Davis would do it. Jed York would not. Okay, more news. Terrell Owens recently on 95.7 The Game with Bonte Hill and Joe Shasky. Mm-hmm. And they asked him if he were Ayuk or Debo, would he be offended that the Niners were shopping them at one point, which is such a deliciously leading question to T.O. because you know what he's going to say. So thank you, Bonte. Thank you, Joe. And thank you, T.O. for saying, yeah, I would have been offended too. Like, yeah, we remember T.O. He was offended by, if he didn't get the ball 15 times in a game, he was offended. Right. So cool.
Yeah. T.O.'s interesting, man, because he's such a good player. And when I was younger, I used to like
such
really
a bad
like
teammate him. Too.
He's not my favorite person. I'll be honest with you. T.O.'s not my favorite person, but he's top four wide receivers of all time. I did love his Cowboy celebration. I thought that was nice, but he does seem like a difficult person to be around and to have on your team.
Yeah.
So was I surprised that he felt that way? No, not at all. Like, that's what you expect T.O. to say. What's funny though, is he did bring up kind of what we were just talking about in regards to Brandon Ayuk. He made the same point. The 49ers gave all those attempts to Debo Samuel when they probably should have been given to Brandon Ayuk, who's the one that got them there and is a better receiver, and he understands why Brandon Ayuk would be frustrated. But he also talked about the overall, you know, trading. Like, they did, the 49ers were looking, or not necessarily looking, but okay with shopping, I guess is the proper word, Debo and Brandon Ayuk. Like, people need to understand that is 100% fact. They were more than willing to trade those guys, but it had to be for the right price. Ultimately, no one was willing to match their price, but they did have them out there as guys that they would willing to look at offers to replace. And so there is that dynamic coming into this season that's a little bit funky. Like, how are Brandon Ayuk and Debo Samuel going to be those adamant professionals to be able to look beyond that? This is just a business. Let's get to work. If Brandon Ayuk gets paid, I think BA will, but I don't know about Debo.
Yeah, I don't think Ayuk's the one you got to worry about because he wanted to get shopped. Like, he seemed like he got permission to shop himself. Mm-hmm. And if he gets an extension, everything will be great. And even if he doesn't, his whole thing is that he's Mr. Professionalism, right? He's always in shape. He always plays his hardest. He always works out his hardest. He always practices his hardest. Like, I don't think he's going to compromise that. Because that's sort of what he's leaning on in these negotiations. Debo is the one you got to wonder about. Like, he wasn't asking to get shopped. He thought he was special here. And now all of a sudden he has to look at Kyle like, are we really friends? Is this just a business? Was that all? I don't know. Debo's the one you got to wonder about. What do you think?
Not only that, I mean, they drafted a wide receiver in the first round. Mm-hmm. Who's obviously a Debo replacement for the future, right? They didn't mm-hmm. they didn't draft a wide receiver in the first round because they want him to replace Juwan Jennings eventually. You don't draft a wide receiver in the first round to replace your third wide receiver. You do that because he's either your first or your second receiver. They're keeping Brandon Ayuk. They've been expressing that. Supposedly negotiations are picking up, and they're going to try to get that done before training camp now with Brandon Ayuk. So Ricky Pearsall was drafted to replace Deebo Samuel, whether it's this year or next year. That's why he's here. It does make you wonder how Deebo is going to respond to that. Is he going to be a good teammate to Ricky Pearsall? Is he going to have some kind of animosity? Is it going to get funky if Ricky Pearsall is taking targets away from Deebo Samuel during the season? It's a narrative. It's something to watch.
Well, there's two ways this could go, right? Deebo could be turned off by the situation and give even less effort than he already is, which would be incredible. Or he could actually use this to fuel him, and he could go back and give his best effort since 2021, considering his replacements in the building. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe the Niners are banking on that one, the second one.
Possibly, man. We'll see. I mean, Deebo is paid, right? If he never played football again for the rest of his life, if he invested his money correctly, he's set for life. Mm-hmm. So is that hunger in Deebo to get another contract? Because this is essentially a contract year for Deebo. Even though he's in contract mm-hmm. through 2025, there's no guarantees, I believe, for Deebo Samuel after this season. So they could get rid of him and not have a heavy burden on their cap. I'm pretty sure that's the case, right? Am I incorrect about that? I know it's
true.
20.
That's true. Yeah,
that's true, right? So they can move on. So this is essentially a contract year for Deebo. How will he respond? That's something that we got to look with, like with all of this stuff going on, drafting his replacement, him being in his last year of a contract. How motivated is he? Is he content with where he's at already in life, which a lot of people would be? Or does he come back better shape than ever and show the 49ers are tripping for thinking they could replace him with Ricky Pearsall?
Yeah. I just think it's good that neither of these players are actually Terrell Owens. I know a lot of people think Terrell Owens great. To me, football is the ultimate team sport, and he's one of the worst teammates of all time. So all of his numbers, all of his accolades, I don't know. I'll take Ayuk and Deebo, frankly, because those guys are team players.
Tremendous receiver.
And Deebo never really was. Pardon?
Yeah. Tremendous receiver. Kind of a
yeah.
I've had like some communications with him, and he's a jerk. I can tell you. To me, he was a jerk to me.
He was a jerk to his coach. He was a jerk to his quarterback. He was a jerk. He is a jerk. That being said, he was at the local pro day to watch his son practice, and I thought it was so endearing because I remember a few years ago, Jerry Rice Jr. was at the local pro day, and Jerry Rice Sr. was not. So at least T.L. showed up. You would have showed up for your kid. You're always posting your kids' track meets. It's really cool.
Proud of my kids. But, I mean, you can be a good dad and a jerk at the same time. You know what I'm saying? Like, you could be a jerk to everyone else, but also a good dad to your kids.
That's true.
So, yeah. But there's also things to be said, like with Jerry. I kind of understand why Jerry didn't, too, because there's times where I'm like, let me not be that.
If I show up, then I have to do an interview, and it shouldn't be about me. That's true.
Right. Yeah. So I understand why Jerry did that, too.
Yeah. All right. So the offseason's over. Mm-hmm. Niners added a lot of players to their team, but did they actually improve their biggest weaknesses, which would be the right side of the offensive line and the run defense? I think most Niner fans and analysts would agree with that.
Yeah. So those are the biggest weaknesses. I guess we'll start on one side of the ball. I mean, let's start on the offense if you want. On the offensive side of the ball, the biggest weakness was, like you just mentioned, the right side of the offensive line. So they had to address that. Did they with Pooney? I think that's a step in the right direction.
But possibly, yeah. Yeah, we'll see what they do. But that's if it ain't Pooney, it's no one. So it's got to be.
Yeah. I mean, first thing I'll say is even if they replace nobody, it's entirely possible that this existing group, because of the continuation, could be better than they were last year. I would still say not good enough. And that can't be the move. Like, we need to improve our right side of our line. Let's just bring everyone back one more year and they'll be better. That's not an actual move in the right direction. Pooney, I really like, and I think they got a good value for him in the third round. I wanted him to draft center first round. tackle second round and Puni third round, which is probably not realistic. But I will say that I do like the Puni pick. My question, though, that I'm wondering is, if you look at this offensive line, to me, it goes Trent Williams, Aaron Banks, 1-2. I don't think anyone questions one. Some people question whether Aaron Banks is the second best guy on this team or not. I think it's clear to me from on the offensive line, Aaron Banks is number two. Then after that, honestly, the third best is either going to be Puni or Feliciano. And so a lot of people are predicting that Puni's going to take that right guard spot. But if you take that right guard spot, now you're taking out Burford, you're taking out Feliciano, and you still have your two biggest weaknesses, which are Jake Brendel and Colt McKivitz. So I'm very curious what they're going to do with this offensive line. Is Puni here for the future next year? Are they going to roll with that same starting five they had in the Super Bowl? And then they're just going to, you know, work Puni in and develop him and get him ready for next season? Or are they going to insert Puni right away? And if they do, where are they going to do? Where is that going to be? Is that going to be at right guard? And if they put him at right guard, what are they going to do with Feliciano and Burford? Mm-hmm. So I have a lot of questions about that. I think it's TBD, but I do think they got better in general, adding Puni, because I think he is a more talented tackle than McKivitz. He's a more talented center than Brendel. He's more talented than Burford, probably even Feliciano.
Yeah, I have a tough time seeing Puni starting week one. They like Feliciano. They like Brendel and McKivitz enough because they've been here a while. So it seems to me that Puni's going to probably start either in a year or two or after an injury. And yeah, maybe he could eventually take over at center, but I think I don't like the idea of playing guys at center who didn't play center in college. Like, can you really snap the ball consistently every game? And if not, are you a center? I'd like to see him more at right tackle in the future. I know he's not going to be like probably a Pro Bowl right tackle, but could he be better than McKivitz? Yeah. I think he can. I think he absolutely can. So I'd like to see that actually kind of sooner rather than later. They could say that they're going to play him at right guard, but Feliciano was pretty good there last year. And I want to see what Spencer Burford has. He's still only 23. Probably young. I think Spencer Burford's probably younger than Dominic Puni. I would like to see that. But Puni at right tackle, I want to see that.
I'm really concerned about this offensive line still. And it may be okay this year, but you got McKivitz, who's not very good. And he's got one more year after this. You got Burford, who has yet to prove that he is a starter in this league. Like, he's had moments. He has started games, but he hasn't proven that he is that guy yet. And he could. Maybe his natural position might be tackle. Maybe they pop him out there. Feliciano's on a year-to-year basis. He said this is his last run. Brendel, I think, I forget what Brendel's contract is. Is this 1 year for Brendel as well? So
no, I think he's got it. I think they gave him an extension. Let me check years. Real quick.
And then the other thing
is exactly when he signed him.
Aaron Banks is up this year. And then you got Trent Williams, who is...
Brendel signed through 2026, like Trent Williams. Somehow, he got a four-year extension, Brendel.
So they're not, I don't think they touch him. I think he's probably going to be your center through that time, at least through 2025.
I would agree.
Think that's it. But then you got Aaron Banks, who... And that's not a good thing. Let me back up. Jake Brendel is probably going to be your guy through at least 2025. That's not a good thing, to be real. Like, he is not a higher echelon center. So it's not a strength there. Mm-hmm. And then you got Aaron Banks, who's only signed through this year. And they didn't even talk about extending him this offseason, which worries me because maybe they're not going to. And maybe Puni's here just to replace him, which means they didn't upgrade at all.
Yeah. And that's the thing. You look at some of the guard contracts in free agency this year, they were ridiculous, like 16, 17 million for guys who didn't even go, haven't even been to Pro Bowls. So that could be Banks.
Right. So maybe the plan is, we got McKivitz, we're good. We got Burford and Feliciano, we're good. We got Brendel through 2026, we're fine. Trent Williams, until he retires, we're good. Maybe he's here to replace Banks. And if that's the case, they haven't improved at all on the offensive line, and they still have all these glaring needs. I think the 49ers are going to regret not investing more draft capital over these last two drafts in offensive line. I think at some point they're going to really regret that. It to me, that's a huge weakness. And maybe they improved a little bit this year, to answer this in question, to answer, did they improve? Maybe a little bit with depth overall. But are they going to be able to run on the right side effectively now by the moves they made? I would say probably not. It's probably going to be similar to what we saw last year.
To me, what's crazy about their offseason is that like they almost operated as if they have no weaknesses. Like, yeah, our offensive line could be better, but we went to the Super Bowl and it wasn't the reason we lost. And we're the number one offense in the league in terms of efficiency. So how bad is our offensive line? It's like, it's obviously the weakest of your team. Like, obviously the weakest of your team. And then on defense, run defense is an issue for this team. It was a huge issue in the NFC Championship game and the game before that against the Packers, and it was an issue against the Browns and frequently throughout the season.
Yeah.
What did you do to improve? You cut Eric Armstead. Okay. Understand why, but doesn't improve your run defense. And then you added Malik Collins and Leonard Floyd. Okay. I don't know. Seems like this could still be an issue.
The thing about Eric Armstead, I was never a big Eric Armstead guy. I didn't see what people saw in him, and maybe I don't know ball. I don't know what it is. I was just never a big Eric Armstead fan. I really never saw him do much. I feel like he really wasn't that guy for to justify his contract. And I think the 49ers eventually agreed, obviously, because they moved on from him. So he was also injured very often. So he wasn't available. So if you're not going to be available and you're not that great, it was probably smart for them to move on from Eric Armstead. But when your replacement is Jordan Elliott and Malik Collins, that's kind of a duo. One's better at pass rush. One's better at run stopping. And maybe those guys, they're more healthier. They have a history of being healthy more than Eric Armstead did. So that's good. They're going to be there. And they're a little better at the run. One of these guys, I'm trying to remember, is it Elliott or Collins is better at run? One of them, I looked at their numbers. I can't
Elliott.
Remember. One of these guys. Elliott, right. Elliott has actually better stats than Eric Armstead on less snaps against the run. So Elliott might actually be an improvement over Eric Armstead against the run. But then the other guy, Collins, is more of a pass rushing defensive tackle. But after that, you don't really have any depth. One of the biggest needs to me for the 49ers was defensive tackle, and they didn't even get one. Now they've signed a big, massive nose tackle type dude in UDFA. And maybe he'll work out, but it's just they rely on to fix their biggest needs with these later on picks. And there's a reason why these guys aren't going higher in general. You can't count on finding a Brock Purdy every single season. So it's just a lack of investment in the trenches that concerns me about this team. And it has been for a while.
Yeah. And what's crazy too, is when we would press Kyle about the run defense last year, he always wants to act like no one really knows football, and whatever the conventional wisdom is on a topic is wrong. So you'd ask him, but hey man, you're really struggling against the run. You're not setting those edges. You seem like you're getting, whooped in the trenches. He's like, nah, it's the secondary. We're really not feeling like we need to. It's really the secondary's problem. Like, okay. So you don't address the trenches in the draft, and Hufanga coming back should help. Mustafa should help. But I still feel like you're getting blown off the ball by the Lions in the NFC Championship game. I'm sure that Malik Collins is really going to change much about that. Jordan Elliott, maybe.
Your run stopping, your solution for run stop can't rely on the third level. Right? If your solution for stopping the run is our safeties, at that point, you've already given up 2-3 yards right before they even get there. I just think there needed to be a bigger investment on. And let's be honest, Javon Hargrave did not play well against the run. Like he'd never really been known as that guy anyways. And he kind of declined from his time with the Eagles. So Javon Hargrave wasn't tremendous against the run either.
Yeah.
So to me, I don't know if the 49ers are going to improve against the run necessarily. And I think a lot of people that I've talked to say it was more of a scheme thing, right? Like, the way they position their safeties. But again, to me, if you're relying on the third level to stop the run, that's not it, right? You need penetration up the middle, pause by your defensive tackles.
So it was schematic. Let's say it's schematic. They get rid of Steve Wilks. They bring in Brandon Staley. He was a head coach with the Chargers for 3 years. First year, his defense in terms of yards per attempt allowed ranked 28th. His second year, it ranked 32nd out of 32 teams. This past year, it was 13th, and then he got fired. So I'm not necessarily certain that Brandon Staley is the run defense doctor. He plays a lot of two high safeties, just like Steve Wilks. Maybe he'll disguise his coverages a little bit and maybe have some more exotic pressures than Steve Wilks. But in terms of run defense, seems like this is going to be an issue again.
Right. Yeah, it does seem like that. And then if you consider Dre Greenlaw is coming back from an injury and may not be available, it's concerning. Like, to me, you come into the season, your biggest needs are stopping a run and building up that right side of the offensive line and just investing it in general for the future. And I don't know how great of a job they did at either. And I think that's my concern going into the season. Are they going to be one of the best teams in the NFL? Sure. But how many weapons do you need? Really, there's only one ball, right? There's only one ball. You have Brandon Ayuk, Debo Samuel, John Jennings, Christian McCaffrey, George Kittle, and now you got Ricky Pearsall. Great. There's only one ball. At what point do you invest in the offensive line? At what point do you really just focus in on stopping the run? Those are the needs that this team had, and I don't think they spent enough resources on it early enough. Like, even the second pick, Renardo Green may end up being fantastic. But they were pretty good at corner going into this year. In the future, they need a corners, right? Because these guys are on one-year contracts. But their corner room actually looked better than it has in a long time going into this draft. So they spent a pick on Ricky Pearsall, which wasn't immediate. It's not an immediate need. It's not. He may end up being great, but it's not an immediate need. I don't care what anyone says. Same with Renardo Green. I don't really see him as an immediate need. They got Diamador Lenore. They got Charvarius Ward. They improved over last year with Rocky Sin and Isaac Yeadom, who played fantastic for the Saints. So even Renardo Green, I don't see as an immediate need. Like, both of those picks are for 2025, really. So I just feel like they had an opportunity to upgrade in their biggest weaknesses this year. There were some great defensive tackles available at pick 31. There were some great centers available at 31. And in the second round, they had some tackle options that were available that made sense, and they didn't invest in either. Which is weird to me because that was clearly their biggest need to almost everybody that watches this team.
Yeah, and when you look at their roster now, you say like, oh, how are defenses going to stop all these weapons? You add Pearsall and Cowing to what they already had. It's like, yeah, that's true. It's tough. They got a lot of weapons on the field, but at the same time, you mentioned it, like, they already don't give Ayuk the ball enough. That's the problem. You're trying to justify giving him this extension that's going to pay him $30 million a year or close to it. And you're thinking, well, okay, but we got to get him like 100, at least 135 targets. Like, well, where are those coming from? You don't give the ball to Kittle enough. So now you're going to carve, you don't get the ball to Jennings enough. Now you're going to carve out a role for Pearsall too. It just seems like overkill.
How many targets, how many catches is Ricky Pearsall going to have this year, do you think?
Over under 9.5.
I had 25 as the over under. So, I mean, Juwan Jennings had 19.
So, how many did Ray have?
Not many, but I don't know. I know Juwan Jennings had 19. Do you think he's going to get more or less?
You also got to get the ball to Juszczyk. He's still on the team. He gets 15 touch catches a year.
It's too many weapons. Too many weapons and not enough base, right? Not enough work in the trenches, not enough investment. If you look at the NFL, all of our opponents.
Not enough base.
It is, right.
Too much trouble.
Not enough base, right?
That's what it is.
They got, all they have is 6x9s in the rear dash. They have no base tubes in the trunk.
It's true. You got that 12-inch sub like I do. Okay, let's take a break to acknowledge our sponsor, Sleeper. We got some, I like doing Sleeper for the NBA playoffs. We got two games today. Starting with, let's do the late game, Minnesota and Denver, because there's a sale. A pick on sale for Anthony Edwards, 22.5 points. What do you think? More? Can he clear?
22.5 for Anthony Edwards? Take that. Yeah. More. Anthony Edwards is my favorite player to watch now in the NBA outside of Steph.
I like it. Michael Porter, Jokic. Who you like for Denver?
What's Halliburton? What's the numbers on Halliburton? What's the
That's the other game. We'll get to him in a minute.
Okay.
Let's get one from Denver. You want to do Jokic or Porter or Jamal Murray or Gordon?
Let's do Jokic.
Okay. 29.5 points, 12.5 rebounds. 1.5 threes.
One and a half threes. I would do that one over.
Okay. Let's see what he did in the last game.
He has this weird over his head 3-point shot. Yeah. It's strange.
Okay, so Halliburton. Let's get him.
Yeah.
Where are you at, Halliburton? Did I pass him? I passed him. Here he is. Okay, 17.5 points.
What about 3-pointers for Halliburton?
3-pointers. 2.5.
That's a tough one. I don't know. Who else we got on that? Who else? What? He's going to get that?
Obi Toppin.
Who else is it? Brunson?
Pascal Siakam. Huh?
They have Brunson in there? 35.5 points?
35.5.
That's high. I would say he might do it, but man, that's a high expectation. He might
Let's take the less. Let's take the less on that one.
Yeah.
But let's get one guy from the Pacers just to say. I know we're going for four.
All right. Who else? Give me some other options.
Siakam, Miles Turner. So many big names on the Pacers.
What's Halliburton's total points?
It's low.
What has he been doing?
17.5. He's been right there. I don't know. You don't have a good feel for Halliburton. How about Siakam? 20.5. He's been consistently under it.
Yeah, I'll go under.
Yeah, absolutely. Those are my picks. Here they are on the screen. What happened?
I wasn't seeing what you were seeing, so I was just listening
to you. That's too bad. Oh, well, next time. If you want to play, use promo code CONE, C-O-H-N, get the deposit match up to $500 on your first deposit. Got to work on my screen sharing. Oh, well. I got a random question for people. Well, before we get to the random question, let's take our super chats that people have been asking. Right. This, think his underlings have resentments, asked Dave Barclay, Mike M. Could be.
Yeah.
Could be.
Yeah. I don't think D'Amico does, but I think Mike does.
Yeah, I don't think Robert Sala does. Harris says Kyle should have been roasted yesterday instead of Tom Brady. Oh, man.
There.
If they ever do a Kyle Shanahan roast, can I please? Please. Yeah,
he was there. He was there.
He was?
Kyle was there with his wife smiling. That was the hardest I've ever seen him smile. He was happy, having a good time.
That's good. Yeah. I was not invited. Good morning, Grant and Ryan, and to the chat.
Good morning, Matt.
Dave Barclay says, Ryan, how was prom night?
Well, I didn't go, but my son seemed to have a good time. Yeah. We let him take our nice car. He took the Benz out and had a good time.
Matt McEwen says D-line got a bunch of tier 2 and tier 3 guys and built the secondary up with a bunch of tier 2 guys and drafted secondary. I love the moves on D.
Pause. Let's see. Read that again. D-line got a bunch of tier 2 and tier 3. Here's the thing, though. What about the D-line depth, right? Like, I feel like this D-line has a lot less depth than it has in years past. How did the 49ers – here's my question for you, Grant. How did the 49ers go in from – being one of the best run defenses in the NFL to being one of the worst in a year? How did that happen?
That's a good question.
There's
a lot of things. They lost players and coaches. So D'Amico leaving was big. Mm-hmm. Also, Ebukam, Ridgeway,
mm-hmm.
Al-Shaair, one of the best linebackers in football. Al-Shaair, Jimmy Ward. That's like four guys. Menihue too, but he was more of a pass rusher with the Niners. So like that's four run defenders right there. And then you get rid of D'Amico Ryans, who was a linebacker and has a good sense of stopping the run. You bring and replace him with a DB coach who's more focused on not giving up big plays in the pass game. And you replace those players with pass rushers.
Right. And the depth right now with 49ers D-line, it's just not strong right now. I expect the 49ers to be salvaging when other teams make cuts. I feel like they're going to pick up at least one or two defensive linemen from other teams. I think that's kind of what they're relying on at this point because they don't have a lot of depth there.
They don't. They absolutely don't. Matt McEwen says bold prediction midseason trade for CB Newsom.
No.
Matt, I read your DM. I decided to get back to you. I slept in. But yeah. Matt thinks the Niners are having a defensive evolution to prioritize DBs who can play press man coverage, force quarterbacks to hold the ball a little bit longer, which will improve the Niners' pass rush. This is what I thought they were trying to do with D'Amico Ryans. It's why they signed Tre'Varius Ward. So maybe they're getting back to that. I thought they were doing that a little bit a few years ago. They didn't do it much under Steve Wilks. I'm with you, Matt.
I like the boldness, Matt. I don't think it happens. I don't think the 49ers are going to invest that heavily in this year. This year, they're trying to get cheaper and younger, dude. I would be surprised.
Matt McEwen, Ryan, I agree. AA, best year. He had Bucky Bosa and Ford. Of course, he had a career year in sacks. Who are you going to let beat you? AA. That's true.
Yeah.
Jason Lutz, F the trenches. We fixed wide receiver 4-5 HB4 priorities.
Yeah. Good job. Good comment, Jason. Yeah.
I want to talk about the Seahawks a little bit because who doesn't want to talk about the Seahawks? We've talked about the Niners, contenders, their rivals in the NFC. Mm-hmm. The Rams, the Lions, the Packers, the Eagles. People don't talk about the Seahawks very much for obvious reasons, but I think it's kind of interesting to step back and reexamine them. They're in the Niners division. They were 9-8 each of the last 2 years, which indicates that why were they 9-8? Why were they stuck right in the middle? Were they a mediocre roster or were they a mediocre coaching staff? To me, you could argue they were one of the worst coached teams in football. Like they had a culture and they played hard, but in terms of scheme, I think they were stuck in the freaking Stone Ages on offense and defense. And now they got this guy, Mike McDonald, who's about my age, and it seems like everyone's kind of chasing him and what he's been doing schematically on defense. I don't know. I think they're an interesting team that people might be sleeping on. That might be a lot better than people realize this year. What do you think?
It's funny. I had Croc on my morning show every at 9 a.m. and Croc comes on and we kind of went through the schedule and that was my wild card pick because to me it's with Seattle you have no clue. Like they have a talented roster, but you're right. I think they've lacked from a schematic standpoint, coaching wise, for a long time. Now the coach they got, he was the Ravens defensive coordinator, correct?
And yes.
A lot of people think that it really was John Harbaugh pulling those strings. So I'm not sure whether this guy is going to be who they want him to be or not. So to me, like with the Seahawks, like you can look at the Cardinals and you can think the Cardinals are probably going to be a little better than they were last year. I think so. You can look at the Rams and you can think, yeah, they lost Aaron Donald, but they did a really good job this offseason. So the Rams are probably going to be a little bit more competitive. And you look at the Seahawks, it's like, I don't know. They could be way better because they have the talent on the roster. Maybe they just needed a new coach, a change of guard there. But this guy's a brand new head coach also. So he could be absolute dog water, you know? So
he could be.
We don't know. Like, yeah.
But here's what I think is intriguing about him. He coached for both Harbaughs. Mm-hmm. He comes from that lineage, serious lineage. I think he's going to be a big upgrade over Pete Carroll, who would he was lost at the end. He couldn't even coach defense. He couldn't stop anything. They have a really good secondary. A really good secondary, my opinion. Their wide receivers are excellent.
Yeah.
I like their running backs. Their quarterback technically isn't bad. Even though he's so weak against the Niners. But I'd be interested to see what that team looks like with just more state-of-the-art schemes on both sides of the ball, which is what they're going to have.
I think it's a possibility, man. That's what I'm saying. Like, to me, they're the team of – because they have a brand-new coaching staff, it could go either way. That coaching staff could be exactly what these guys needed to get over the hump. Or it could be worse than Pete Carroll. I mean, it's hard to imagine that that's the case, but it could be. So that's why I said they're my wild card this year. I don't really know what to expect from Seattle. Again, they have a good roster. They got some talent. They've been drafting really well for the last couple of years. They got some really good pieces, but what's this coaching staff going to look like? It's hard to tell. Are they going to be better? Are they going to be worse? I'm not sure. Geno, to me, is kind of – he's like, what, top 15, somewhere in that range?
Maybe. We'll see. Borderline. Well, yeah. we were talking all stream about we kind of would have liked the Niners to address the trenches a little bit more on both sides. That's what the Seahawks did. First draft for Mike McDonald, who's a Harbaugh disciple and first round pick. They go D-line, Byron Murphy. That's a nice addition for them, even though maybe before the draft, people wouldn't have looked at D-line as a big need for them. And then in the third round, their second pick, five picks before the Niners take Pooney, the Seahawks take Haynes, the guard, who a lot of people had the Niners taken in round two. So that seemed like a pretty nice pick, too. First two picks, trenches on both sides of the ball. 9-8 team, kind of poorly coached. Watch out. Watch out. They got talent on both sides of the ball.
The NFC West is definitely better this year than they were last year. I expect a lot more competition. It is funny because I was listening to you talk, and it just reminds me of, it is very arrogant. Like, Kyle Shanahan has had success with what he's done, right? He hasn't gone all the way, but he has had success. But it is very arrogant, his approach, right? Most people realize it's a passing league, so we're going to pass more. We're going to build up the passing game. Kyle's like, nope, we're going to run. Most people think you win. They've been saying this for 50, 60, 70 years. The game is won in the trenches. Everyone thinks like that. That's the mentality for most NFL teams. Kyle's like, nope, I can get by with a good left tackle and a quick passing game and a run game to the left side. Like he's very like, he's different in his approach to it. We'll see if it pays off. So far, it's got him very far. Hasn't got him all the way.
And I think like, so in a few days, I want to say Thursday, the schedule's coming out. And when you go, when the schedule comes out, you always go through it and you try to predict wins and losses. And then for a few years, it's been real easy to pencil in two wins when the Niners play the Seahawks, like without even thinking, oh, okay, Geno's the quarterback and Pete Carroll's still the coach. Like, no, even no disrespect to Geno. Kyle owns Pete Carroll. Just does.
Yeah.
Whatever the hell Pete Carroll is doing schematically on defense, Kyle figured it out 7-8 years ago, and Pete hasn't updated really anything, and that's the easy win. Now, you got the guy who made Kyle's offense look utterly awful last year. I mean, Mike McDonald and that Ravens defense made Brock Purdy look like
he didn't belong in the league.
He didn't belong in the league. That's what he made him look like. So I'm not saying that he could do that with Seattle's personnel, but you can't just
have a good personnel.
Reflectively say, oh, that's two wins. Like, we'll see.
You can't say that. They have good personnel. That's the thing about it. Yeah, so, I mean, you bring up a good point.
They can play the press man coverage that you got to play against the Niners. They can do that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's Brock Purdy's worst game of his life. Yeah. Was going against the Ravens defensive coordinator, who's now the head coach in Seattle. That definitely, I'm sure, I'm like, right, when they're preparing to play Seattle, they got to look back at the Ravens game last year and figure out how to beat that, because they didn't have success against it. That's the film they're going to be watching.
Let me ask you a question. It's going to be interesting. What team's going to be better this year? The Seahawks or the Cardinals?
I don't know. They're all going to be good, man. Like I really think
it's going to be a tough division.
They drafted really well.
I think it's going to be a tough division.
It is. It is. And Rams look really good now, too. And they still
Rams look really good.
Yeah, I think the NFC West is back. Is coming back to dominance. You know, for a while there, they were the cream of the crop in the NFL. And then the last year or two, it hasn't been the case. It's just been all Niners. But I think they're back to being towards the top. And the Niners got an interesting schedule, man. Their home schedule is actually harder than their away schedule right now. I mean, they got to play the Lions and the Chiefs and the Cowboys and the Jets with Aaron Rodgers back, right? And they get, you know, we'll see, man. Their away schedule is not too tough. Like, they play the Packers, Dolphins, Bills. Like, that's pretty much it away. But the NFC West is going to be a battle this year.
Yeah, and it's like, so let's open it up to the whole NFC West. When the Niners face the Seahawks, we've seen that Chavarius Ward can cover DK Metcalf. The Niners DBs match up pretty well with Seattle's wide receivers. Can anyone on the Niners cover Puka Nacua? I don't know. I don't think they couldn't the first time they faced him. And then the second time they faced him was a game that didn't really count. So that'll be interesting to see how the Niners handle Puka Nacua in year two of his career. He looks really good, and they get him the ball a lot, unlike the Niners of Brandon Ayuk. And then Marvin Harrison Jr., who on the Niners, like, we don't know if he's going to be the truth, but assuming he is, who on the Niners can cover that guy? I don't know if they have one. That's something they might need to think about because he's going to be in the division for a while.
Yeah. I mean, I was really thinking about that this morning, man. The NFC West is going to be good, man. I really can see the Cardinals taking a step forward, the Rams taking a step forward compared to last year. And again, the Seahawks, to me, they're the wild card. They could be really good, or this coach could be absolute ass and as a head coach, and they could fall apart. But if I had to bet based on what he did as the Ravens defensive coordinator, it does concern you a little bit. I don't think I'll put it this way. I do not think the 49ers are going to sweep the NFC West this year. I don't think that's going to happen.
It's just interesting that it was Pete Carroll and Cliff Kingsbury a couple of years ago, two coaches the Niners owned. And now it's Jonathan Gannon, who really did a good job against Kyle Shanahan in the NFC Championship game. Mm-hmm. And Mike McDonald, who frankly embarrassed Kyle Shanahan on Christmas, just one game.
Yeah.
So I wonder if those two guys were hired, like how much of the reason they were hired is because of what they did against Kyle Shanahan.
I mean, I absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. They were. Yeah, yeah. The Seahawks looked at what they did to the 49ers on Christmas. Absolutely. That's a huge part of why they were hired. No doubt.
It's like, every coach in the NFC West either runs Kyle Shanahan's system or has a defense that's made to stop it.
Yeah.
Isn't that kind of thing?
I think the Niners are a little better, right? I think they are better than they were last year, right? Which is hard to do because they were good. I do think that. I went through position by position. They are a little bit better. Are they like, it's hard.
They might be a little bit deeper.
Well, they went to the Super Bowl, right? So, expecting them to improve greatly is probably not realistic.
I have high expectations. Fuck that.
Well, I do too, right? Like, I want them to be better, right? But they went to the Super Bowl. So expecting them to make leaps and bounds, like the Cardinals got a lot better because there's a lot of room for growth there, right?
Yes.
The Rams as well, I think, a little bit. Seahawks have a huge opportunity to improve quite a bit. Niners were already up there. But I do think they improved in a lot of ways. The only position I went by position, honestly, position group by position group. And even though the offensive line is not good enough, they got a little better with Pooney and continuation.
Yeah.
Right? Even though the defensive line is not good enough, they might have. They're the same.
We'll see. We'll see about the defense line. That'll be interesting. If Armstead is healthy in Jacksonville, I'm not sure they got better. But if he has another 8-game season, then yeah.
But receiver, I think they got better. Quarterback, I think they're going to be better, even if they're statistically not, right? Full off season for Brock Purdy.
Linebacker didn't get better.
Huh?
Linebacker didn't get better.
Linebacker may not. Depends on Greenlaw. If Greenlaw comes back healthy, I like the Bethune pick. I like
that. To me, though, can I look at it in a completely pessimistic, negative way?
Yeah, of course.
The way they got better is in terms of depth and guys for the future. In terms of now, they got older. And this all these improvements are guys who really won't help much, except for Leonard Floyd. A lot depends on Leonard Floyd this year. He better be good. If he's not, they're in trouble.
Yeah.
So let me just be pessimistic and negative. I needed to bring that to the show. It doesn't have, you know how some like recipes need a little bit more salt? This show needed a little bit more negativity. So I'm glad to provide that.
Well, I appreciate it. I absolutely do. You know, like, I would say the Niners are better slightly, right? It's just, it's hard to improve a lot, but all these other teams got better too.
I'm sorry. I think my negativity and pessimism won't allow me to say that.
Okay, that's fine. I think if you broke it down by position, I think if we broke it down by position, you would have to admit.
Yeah, if you use reason and logic, you would have to admit, but I don't do that. So,
yes, right. Yeah.
I go off emotions and vibes, and my emotions and vibes are real down on this team right now.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
facts over feelings.
There we go. Facts over feelings. I'll leave it at that.
Crazy Raj 16 says Niners could have had traded back for a center and pick. Next pick would have been right guard and then wide receiver. They need to protect Brock Purdy like Drew Brees was protected by the Saints. Yeah.
It's a crazy concept.
Yeah.
They're like, if
you like your quarterback, let's protect him.
That's crazy. Wild. Yeah. Build up the offensive line. Hey, Kyle. The games are won in the trenches. Have you ever heard that one before? I know it's probably a new concept. It's wild.
To me, if you put all your resources into the weapons and not the offensive line, what you're saying is that the quarterback position, a lot of people should be able to play quarterback for this team. We're not really valuing the quarterback position. And we're propping it up with the weapons. But if you have a great quarterback like the Chiefs, seems like what you do is you pay him and the offensive line and everyone else is replaceable. Sorry, only so much money to go around. Niners don't act like that.
It's like buying 22s for your car and getting candy paint. But the engine, it
you still got a V4.
Yeah.
It's still a Honda.
Yeah. Four banger. Yeah.
Completely agree. And that's what I think interesting. If you compare the Niners draft to the Washington Commanders draft, it's different. And Adam Peters was with the Niners. I think it's fair to assume that there was some like creative tension or some disagreement about how to build a team. Because you look what he did over there. I mean, neither the Niners or the Washington Commanders needed a wide receiver, quote unquote. Niners took two. They took one in round one, and Washington took one at the end of round three, which is quite a reasonable spot. And it's going to be interesting to see who has a better professional career, Ricky Pearsall or Luke McCaffrey. It'll be very interesting.
Yeah, or Cowan and Malik Washington, who the Dolphins picked up. Watch for that one, too.
Yeah. Yep. Matt McEwen says Stafford stays healthy. Rams going to be an issue. Cooper Kupp too.
Yeah,
those are guys who haven't.
And that's the other thing. That's the other thing. The Niners were very fortunate from a health standpoint last year. They haven't been in previous seasons. That was the most fortunate they've been from a health standpoint. I mean, I hope it continues, but to expect it to is probably not where the smart money is.
And all of their key players are older. Well, I mean, everyone got older in life, but Debo older, Trent Williams older, Bosa older, you just go down the line. And that's good for certain players, but most of them, it's not good. It's good for Ayuk. It's good for Lenore. It's good for Purdy. It's not good for McCaffrey. It's not good for.
But correct me if I'm wrong. If Brock Purdy is healthy all season, this is the first time that's ever happened under Kyle Shanahan and the 49ers 2 years in a row, correct?
Yeah, so maybe that's not something people should just expect, count on. Yeah. Number one position in NFL, quarterback, who protects him?
Colton McKivitz.
Ayuk.
Colton McKivitz.
Ricky Pearsall.
Yeah.
He protects himself.
Right. He does. He actually does.
He certainly does. It's what one of the things he's best at.
Yeah.
All right, it's 12:06 on the West Coast. Is no longer, well, yeah, it is. It used to be the Monday morning show. Now it's Mondays with Ryan, so we could technically do this all day because we're not really locked into an AM or PM slot, but I think that's enough. Ryan, thank you for giving me all of your time. I appreciate it.
My pleasure, sir.
Thanks, everyone. Larry and I will be tomorrow, so I'll see you guys then, unless the Niners trade Ayuk, and then I'll do something about that, but I don't think that's going to happen right now, per se. See you guys. I like saying per se.